Welcome to Populist. It is episode 12, the Women of Rock episode. It's February of 2021. I'm Steve Hafer. With me is Kirk Trutner. How are you doing today, Kirk?
I'm doing great. I am so energized by this topic. I don't know about you, but I had a ton of fun researching all of this and just reminding me just how good women of rock and roll have been, can be, and are. It's been a wonderful journey. What about you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they're so good, my head hurts. My finding the people for it and slotting them in the right places was hard. And as I kind of mentioned to you just before we went on, I'm still not sure if I have the right number 9 and 10, because there's 6 other ladies sitting right there who I think are just as worthy. It was hard, but fun. And it's fun going back and listening to some tracks and reading some more about them. And, we'll see what we get. But so everybody at home is clear. Yeah. We are talking about front women or solo acts of rock. People who take the lead, they command the stage, not the bands, not the lead guitarists, but the actual front women. It's kind of tough to distinguish between traditional rock with pop rock and punk rock, but they're all kind of the same thing. But, even though some of the artists did transition into other stuff, I think if they have those roots in rock and that's kind of where they made their name, that's they're on our list. We'll deal with people like Aretha and Barbara Streisand and Diana Ross and Beyonce and Whitney Houston in other shows. They're all super, super talents, and we do want to talk about them, but we kind of had to just limit things a little bit, and we kept it into rock. So, saying all that, I went first last time. Kirk, you want to get the ship going?
Yes, let's get started.
All right, so who is
number 10?
To start the list for me, my number 10 is a nominee for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, operatically trained, very diminutive, I can never say that word, and it's Pat Benatar. Her first 6 albums made the top 15. 3 of them got to the top 5. All of them were certified platinum. Really enjoyed a lot of success in the mid-80s. But the main reason I've got her on the list, not only just for the things I just mentioned, but she was one of the first MTV stars. The song and the video for You Better Run was actually the 2nd video ever shown on MTV. I'm Gonna Follow You was the 30th video. So she got a lot of play right off the bat with MTV. And I'm sure many of us, especially those of us of a certain age, remember the Love is a Battlefield video as well, nominated for Video of the Year, and really cemented her as a strong performer. Again, operatically trained, and those pipes just could reach all kinds of range. Enjoyable voice, a good edge to the music, great stage presence, still touring today. Pat Benatar is my number 10.
Great choice. Love me some Pat. That's for sure. My number 10 is, I feel I'm just torn, and this is why she was on and off the list and everything. If you read a lot of rock aficionados lists and everything, she's up there in the top 3 in a lot of those lists. But I've never been a huge fan, and this is Patti Smith. Born in 1946, she's an iconic performer called the Godmother of Punk. One of the most unique voices around. She's, has that kind of androgynous appearance, but she's as powerful as any male. But at the same time, she can be a romantic poetic as any of the best female poets. And she's got this style and she commands the stage. And she was big back there, so much so that SNL decided to spoof her many times using Gilda Radner as Patti Smith.
Wasn't that character Candy Slice? Yeah, I think for Slice? Their
thing, but they were doing the spoof on Patti Smith. Yeah. Yes. But she wrote for magazines like Cream, and then she took a little break after the late 70s, but reemerged in 1988 with the album Dream of Life and the song People Have the Power, which was used in all sorts of political conventions and things. She influenced people like Courtney Love, Susie Sue, PJ Harvey. So she was a power, and so I had to put her on my list, Patti Smith.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I went back and forth and back and forth doing the research. Again, to your point, a lot of lists have her in the top 5, if not top 2 or 3. She always kind of reminded me of a female version of Lou Reed. that kind of stereotyping, if you're going to do that. Again, not as familiar with her as I probably should be, probably contributed to me not putting her on my list. But there's no denying that she did have an impact on rock and roll and music in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who is your number nine?
Number nine.
One of the great debut albums from a female artist was released in 1988, self-titled, and the artist is Melissa Etheridge. 14 albums total recorded, 5 went platinum, 2 went gold, 25 million records sold. The album Yes I Am actually spent 138 weeks on the top 100 charts back in 1993 and went 6 times platinum. Nominated for 15 Grammys, won a couple. She actually also, I'd forgotten this, won an Oscar for the best original song in 2007, which was I Need to Wake Up from the horror film An Inconvenient Truth. Very distinctive performer, very smoky voice, really took rock and roll and made it her own, and made it accessible as well. And that's something I think you see from artists, you know, as I go on my list, I'm going to reward longevity. And so she is actually someone who is a bit younger on the list in the fact that she began her career late 80s, early 90s, rather than back in the 60s and 70s, as some of my other performers might have. And she really kind of took the reins from some of those people and continued it on and made it permissible to be a rocker and to be a little bit more ballad oriented and take rock in her own direction. Absolutely terrific performer. Melissa Etheridge is my number nine.
Yeah. I love Come to My Window. Good. Great, great, great song. Love her voice. Love to watch her on stage playing the guitar. She's a great performer. My number nine is somebody who doesn't, she's weird. The body of work is not huge as far as big number of hits, but the hits she has were big at the time. And she is an icon for sure. And that is Debbie Harry, the lead singer from the group Blondie. In fact, she and her platinum blonde hair was such an icon that most people thought she was Blondie. And she's, no, the group is Blondie. I'm Deborah Harry, or you can call me Debbie. Beautiful performer, really had that great look, had the it factor, and she was a dynamic performer, even though I'd almost categorize her as much of a performance artist, kind of like the early Gaga or early Pink careers were. But she was a pioneer of punk rock and definitely of MTV. She was one of the early MTV stars. She's a subject of a number of works by Andy Warhol. He took such an interest in her, and she was just a big iconic piece of focus from the music industry of that time. She influenced Cyndi Lauper, Gwen Stefani, Madonna, Hayley Williams, Gaga, who we just talked about. So she obviously had an important place in the industry, and where I said the body work may not be huge, songs like Heart of Glass, Rapture, Call Me, Tide Is High, you know, all very good songs. Her performances are great. The songs have legs. They still are very effective today. So Debbie Harry.
She was, as we talked about, you know, before we went on, we added and dropped a lot of people at the last minute. And Debbie Harry was literally a 5 minute ago drop for me. It's funny you mentioned the songs, because I had notes on those. Heart of Glass, you know, is a little bit more of a disco song. Tide Is High is reggae.
Yeah.
Rapture is rap. There's not a whole lot of rock to me in Debbie Harry's catalog. I mean, Call Me is a pretty good rock song, but you know, for the most part, it was more new wave, more punk, more some of these genre, you know, bending kinds of things rather than a rocker. So that's why she didn't make my list.
I think they're drawn from those influences for sure. I mean, there's no denying those influences, but I wouldn't call them pure reggae song or pure whatever. And I think they do fall into the category of what early punk rock was. And even though it's not traditional hard hitting rock, it's still punk rock. And so that's how I got there. Let's move on for your list. Who do you have at number eight?
Number eight was a member of the groundbreaking group, The Runaways, with other icons, including Lita Ford and Sherry Curry. And that's Joan Jett. She is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as part of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. the single I Love Rock and Roll, which is probably your signature song, was number one for 7 weeks, 3 platinum albums, 3 gold albums. And what she brought to the table was she was unabashedly a rocker. And if you look at most of her big songs, they're all those big kind of stadium anthems. I Love Rock and Roll, Bad Reputation, Light of Day. You know, there's several others, but they're all those kinds of raise your lighter, bang your head kind of songs. And she just made a name for herself with that, coming out of the Runaways, which was very early punk, you know, the 75 to 80 kind of birth of punk. She came out of that, took some of that sensibility, married it with just straightforward rock and roll, and really came up with a signature sound, signature look. They're still touring. In fact, if we get concerts in 2021, there's a tour lined up with Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Poison, and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. So if you really want to go back to your 80s, that's where you can do it. Anyway, Joan Jett is my number 8.
Yeah, you hit on the nose when you said she really represents what a hard-charging rocker is. She just has that image, she acts like, and everything. She didn't make my list. She's one of those who came close. And sadly enough, it's because I actually saw her perform not too long ago, and I was disappointed, I got to tell you. And yeah, I know age has a little something to do with it, but she was opening for somebody else who is high on my list today, who is of the same age, if not a little older, and age has not diminished my person higher up. So yeah, she just missed, but definitely one of those rockers for sure.
Wait a minute, hang on. If you see Reggie Jackson play one game and he strikes out, does he not belong in the Hall of Fame?
No. And in fact, that's not a very good comparison. Sorry.
You know what I'm saying, though? You're taking one performance and using that as a defining characteristic of this.
I was just saying that I think it piqued my interest, and I actually went back and watched some more video of her and everything. And it was just kind of the straw that broke the tie, if anything. So like, she was one of those close and could be. And if I had a top 20, she's easily on that for sure. Not a question. She's in the top 15. But anyway, my number 8 is one of those people that I didn't know how I felt about her at first, but as the years have gone by, I just love her and love her and love her more. And she does it all. And that is Sheryl Crow. Born in 1962, has sold over 50 million albums, 9 Grammys, 32 nominations. She's done a Bond song, Tomorrow Never Dies, which always scores big points with me. She's done songs for other movies, like the song Real Gone from Pixar's Cars. But then we all know her, the things like All I Want to Do and Every Day is a Winding Road, Soak Up the Sun, Steve McQueen, The First Cut is the Deepest, great cover of Guns N' Roses hit Sweet Child of Mine. She's a very infectious performer, and you feel the love that she feels for the music and her love of performing when you see her. It just comes out and she sweeps you up. Very similar to what Melissa Etheridge does. And we spoke about that just a minute ago. She just projects a strong sense of self. She writes about all different topics. She writes about war, guns, abortion, greed, things that other rock stars tend to shy away from. But it's her way of getting her message out, but incorporating her music and still writing darn good music. She was an influence on Grace Potter, KT Tunstall. I think she's just the total ball of wax. Sheryl Crow, my number 8.
Sheryl did not make my list. For me, she's always been kind of a one-trick pony. Talented, great voice, don't get me wrong. I just, as you said, she's kind of in that Melissa Etheridge category, that same time period, same kind of approach. Although she was probably a little bit more folky, Etheridge a little bit more rock oriented. I never quite caught on with me. Some fun songs, but just as an overall artist, never caught on with me. So while she would, again, probably be in my top 15 or 20, she didn't make my top 10.
So you're saying that if you saw Reggie Jackson and he only knew one horse trick, that, no, kidding.
Depends on the horse.
Let's move on.
Number 7.
My number 7 is also in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I think from here on out, all of my list members are in the Rock Hall of Fame. She went in as part of the Jefferson Airplane, and along with Janis Joplin, was an absolute fixture on the psychedelic scene in San Francisco from 1966 to 1970. And that's Grace Slick. Strong, distinctive, very identifiable voice, very identifiable presence, outspoken, as many of the people on this list, the women on this list are. And while she isn't a songwriter, she did write two of the defining songs of that San Francisco psychedelic era. And that's White Rabbit and Somebody to Love, both recorded by the Jefferson Airplane. Her career spanned over four decades. She then, you know, continued on with Jefferson Starship, you know, more hits, you know, followed, but it was certainly not that genre defining, you know, type of music that the Airplane and the Dead and Quicksilver and Moby Grape and all these bands were creating, you know, in San Francisco at that time. But as she said, she had the wisdom to get out while the getting is good. You know, her quote was, "All rock and rollers over the age of 50 look stupid and should retire." And so she took her own advice. She started going into photography and art, still very much an activist and still very outspoken. But if you grew up in the Bay Area, you knew the Airplane, you knew Grace Slick. And she is just one of those indelible women of rock and roll to me. And she's my number seven.
And you can make the argument that she did not write very often or whatever, but I would make the argument that's two of Jefferson Airplane's best songs that she wrote there.
It's two of rock and roll's best songs.
Yeah.
You know, defining songs.
Don't write often, but when you do, make it count. Nice job, Grace. My number seven is one of those, like a lot of the beloved people who did not make my list. I equate her a lot with Carly Simon and some of those type of people. And she's not a hard rocker by any means, but her contribution to rock is undeniable and songwriting in general. And that is Carole King. Born in 1942 in New York City. She started writing music as a teen pioneer, basically. And she caught the Beatles' attention. Some of her early songs were so good and they took note. Part of the Laurel Canyon collective of writers, musicians, artists, musicians come and go in. And she was just all part of that scene, which one of the things I really love about her. Four Grammys, 25 solo albums, Tapestry, one of the best selling albums in the 20th century. Just an amazingly great album. It also was the number one record for, I guess, for the longest time, for almost a 20 year period. Songs like It's Too Late, Far Away, I Feel the Earth Move, just great big staples in rock and definitely in my playlists. She was a Kennedy Center honoree, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame. And she just created the music and language of independence for women and kind of a return to nature thing. Great piano riffs, melodies, overall feel of wistful comfort. Influenced people like Sheryl Crow, who I just mentioned, Ricky Lee Jones, Amy Winehouse, and even John Lennon, as we talked about the Beatles. So Carole King, my number seven. And you and I actually sat together and watched a concert of hers once.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And, you know, God, I wanted to put her on this list so badly. I really did, because of all the things that you mentioned. And even going back further, you know, in her partnership with her first husband, Jerry Goffin, you know, they wrote a ton of songs before she even got to Tapestry. I mean, if she had just started with Tapestry and made her way forward, she deserves all the accolades that she has received.
Yeah.
But given all the songs she wrote before that, you know, in Tin Pan Alley back in New York, you know, she is just legendary. I just couldn't find a way of calling her a rocker. A rock and roll person. And I'm probably wrong and I'll probably change my mind. And if we do the new segment we're talking about, mm-hmm. I'll probably put her on. Mm-hmm. But I adore Carole King and I'm hoping that we do a singer songwriter list down the road, because that's when, you know, I can take the time to gush even more about people like her and Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Who again, also huge influence on the rock era, but I don't know that they are rockers in my opinion, but if we get to singer songwriters, boy, that's going to be a two-parter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cause I feel like I said the same way about her and Carly Simon, and I love Carly, and Carly didn't make my list, but yeah. All right. Who's your number six?
Number six.
Well, Well, it wouldn't really be a Kirk list if he didn't take a couple liberties here and there. And I'm taking a liberty here. My number six is not one woman, but two women, but they are sisters and they form the band Heart. And that is Ann and Nancy Wilson. Honestly, you cannot separate the two.
You can, and I will.
You can, but you shouldn't. They are perfect partners in the art of making rock and roll. They had one of the great debut albums of all time, Dreamboat Annie in 1975 with Crazy on You, you know, just such a great album, still a great album. They are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as the band Heart. Gibson, the guitar maker Gibson, named Nancy as one of the top 10 female guitar players of all time. And Ann has one of the great voices in rock and roll, as they all do, for the most part. You know, was Grace Slick's voice great? No, but it was distinctive. Ann's voice is great. And if you have ever seen, I think we've mentioned it on the show before, if you've ever seen the version of Stairway to Heaven that Heart did on the Kennedy Center Honors when Led Zeppelin was awarded, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It was a defining performance, and it was remarkable that it was almost 40 years after their debut album came out. They have been making great music for years and years, and that is why Ann and Nancy Wilson are my number six.
Man, taking liberties. There has to be people in positions of authority all around this country going, wow, if he takes this many liberties on the podcast, I wonder what he does in real life. They're just digging into your stuff now. You're just Mr. Liberty.
Hey, I'm looking for a job. So, you know, let's paint a better picture.
But you're an outstanding human, and boy, do you have a great work ethic.
Why, thank you, Steve.
I'll talk about one of those ladies later. Good choice. Love that band. Great band. My number six is somebody you mentioned earlier, and that was Pat Benatar. And it is Pat Benatar, my number six. Dynamic performer, big energy, and a not so big body. Petite girl, but she could bring it. Two multi-platinum albums, platinum, four-time Grammy winner, 15 Billboard top 40 singles. Just a great, great performer. And memorable, and the songs hold up, and you just feel that she is a rocker, even though she was so much more, and she could dance. And even though she wasn't comfortable doing that, she would force herself to break her comfort zone. Songs like Heartbreaker, Hit Me With Your Best Shot, We Belong, Love Is a Battlefield, Invincible, all big, big time songs that will remain popular for years and years to come, I predict. She quit her job originally as a bank teller to pursue her dream. I respect that. It would have been very easy to keep the comfy job, but she knew what she wanted to be, and she struggled through a lot of years and then became one of the early stars on MTV. In fact, I think she was the first female to appear on MTV with the song You Better Run. She's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame she got snubbed this past year in 2020. Don't know how that happened, but then again, the Doobie Brothers are just getting in. She's influenced people like Hayley Williams, Avril Lavigne, Alanis Morissette, big talent, big voice, Pat Benatar.
Good choice. That's our first matchup.
That is. I think we'll have a couple more, though, as we go.
I think you're right.
Then let's see where this does go. Who is your number five?
Number five.
My number five, I would describe as the Iggy Pop of her generation. She is also in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with her band, The Pretenders. And that is Chrissy Hynde. Chrissy really embodied the punk and rock and roll sensibility. In fact, a real punk sensibility, and brought that to The Pretenders. You know, some of her quotes are things like, "I loathe the Grammys, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is actually the Rock and Roll Hall of Beep." I mean, she's very outspoken. And it's easy to think of her as somebody who came along, I'm not going to say recently, but doesn't have the longest career. But you forget that she formed The Pretenders in 1978. I mean, they've been around for, you know, one, two, three, six decades now. They're still performing. She collaborates with dozens of people. She's got, again, like almost all the women on this list, a very distinctive voice, a very distinctive presence, and really brings an energy, that punk energy, to rock and roll. It's interesting that a tamer song like Brass in Pocket was the one that got them their break, when you can start looking at, you know, Stop Your Sobbing, Message of Love, and a few others that have more of that, that punk and new wave kind of energy with it. Again, another beneficiary of MTV. Brass in Pocket was the seventh video played on MTV on opening day, and Message of Love was the 19th, making them the first band to have two different videos played on MTV. And that was in the first 20 songs that they played. The Pretenders are in the Rock Hall of Fame. Chrissy Hynde is in the Rock Hall of Fame, and Chrissy Hynde is my number five.
Love me some Chrissy Hynde. this is one of the ones we were talking about. It just killed me. She and Bonnie Raitt and Annie Lennox were just like on the list, off the list, on the list, off the list. And it's like, and I love them all to death. Chrissy Hynde, also one of the coolest female rockers in my mind. I just thought, cool. Love her. Good choice. My number five is, in my estimation, one of the best voices of the women of rock, and that is Linda Ronstadt. Born in 1946 from Tucson, Arizona. 10 Grammys, multiple platinums, platinum, gold records, the whole bit. 21 singles in the Billboard Top 40, 38 in the Top 100. She was on Time magazine cover multiple times on the Rolling Stone, Kennedy Center honoree. And I think half of America had a secret crush on her when she was just becoming really big. She could cover so many songs and do really good covers of songs like It's So Easy, Blue Bayou, When Will I Be Loved, Desperado, Tumbling Dice, you know, great, great songs, along with a lot of her own great songs like You're No Good and the plethora of songs she had. Plus, then she changed it up and she got into the Nelson Riddle Orchestra and started doing those type of things. She got into her Spanish ranchera roots. She sung jazz. She just does it all. But she deserves to be on my list because she started off with a rocker and she could rock with the best of them. Talented person, influenced Pat Benatar, who I just talked about, the Dixie Chicks, Sheryl Crow, who's on my list, and collaborated with a ton of people from Bette Midler through Frank Zappa, quite a wide list. So Linda Ronstadt, my number five.
I think that is an inspired choice, and I will talk a little bit more about Linda when we get to her a little higher on my list, where she belongs.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. But since we are moving into our top four, who is your number four?
Number four.
My number four has the unique distinction of not only being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but in the Soul Hall of Fame as well. She is one of rock's great comeback stories, and that is Tina Turner. Ike and Tina Turner review. That era, the 60s and into the early 70s, was a very rich and vibrant one for them. Everybody remembers the cover of Proud Mary, which is to this day one of the iconic performances in rock and roll. But after Ike and Tina disbanded in 1976, Tina didn't do anything for almost a decade. And it wasn't until Private Dancer was released in 1984 that she began to this second wave, this second chapter in her career. 12 Grammys, 3 Grammy Hall of Fame Awards, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Awards, star on the Walk of Fame, Kennedy Center honoree, sold more than 100 million albums. She was the first black artist and first female artist to be featured on the cover of Rolling Stone. I mean, she has just got a big stage presence, a big voice, tons of energy. If you remember the performance of State of Shock she did with Mick Jagger at Live Aid, yeah. You know, again, one of those signature, you know, the big wig, the tight dress. And she just got out there. And, you know, if you can hold your own with Jagger energy wise and movement wise on the stage, you're doing something. And then, you know, she had this wonderful career as an actress as well. I mean, she was terrific in Mad Max and The Last Action Hero. And it really was this revitalization of her career. So I'm happy to put Tina Turner as my number four.
Love me some Tina Turner, too. That's for sure. Dynamic performer. I'm going to talk about her a little later. And Mick Jagger, it was a great performance between those two. That's burned in your mind if you ever saw it. It's so great. And Mick Jagger has even admitted that a lot of his own quirky dance moves that he does were lifted from things that Tina Turner did earlier in her career. Good choice. My number four is somebody I've loved for years, and that is Stevie Nicks of Fleetwood Mac. Now, much like when you were talking about Ann Wilson and Nancy Wilson, Stevie Nicks does give a lot of credit to her friendship and her sharing of the stage with Christine McVie. But I think Stevie is the more important person in rock because she brought a whole new gentleness and kind of an etherealness. She was a West Coast folk rocker originally, and she turned into kind of a music mystic. Fleetwood Mac, one of the all-time great bands. We've talked about them before on the show. And her music encompassed myths, nature, consciousness, things like that. She's famous for incorporating those amazing gossamer gowns that went with her long blonde hair and her shawls that gave her that flowing ethereal, you know, mood to her music. Great voice, very unique voice. Love it. She wrote songs like Dreams and Rhiannon and Landslide, huge, huge songs. She has a Grammy, 13 nominations, influenced people like Courtney Love, Tori Amos, Jewel, Sheryl Crow. Diminutive at 5'1", but packs a lot of power, packs a lot of stage presence. Named one of the 100 greatest songwriters of all time by Rolling Stone. That's my number four, Stevie Nicks.
I think, again, a great choice that I will be talking about in much greater detail much later on.
I had a feeling you would. All right, here we are going into our top three.
Number three.
You just talked a little bit about her. My number three is Linda Ronstadt. Again, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I would argue that she was blessed with the best, most powerful voice of the rock era. She has sold, I think, as you mentioned, more than 100 million albums. And what I really admire about her is she started as a folk singer, Stone Ponies, you know, Different Drum, the Mike Nesmith song. She sang country with her good friend Emmylou Harris and with Dolly Parton, and the three of them did Trio. She did a lot of the Latin covers, as we talked about, the pop world that she was in, the Nelson Riddle and the Standards, and all of these things, soundtracks, you know, et cetera. But she at heart is still a rocker. When you listen to songs like When Will I Be Loved? How Do I Make You? Tumbling Dice, all the songs you're talking about, she absolutely has rock and roll chops. And then, getting into the objective awards, 10 Grammys, 3 American Music Awards, an Emmy, star in the Walk of Fame, Kennedy honoree. But again, I would also include the impact that she's had on rock and roll, as well as we talked a little bit about Cass Elliott and Joni Mitchell having an impact. So did Linda Ronstadt. I mean, it was her backing band that left her and went to become, oh yeah, Eagles. You know, she played in Hollywood. She was part of that California sound, as we talked about a little bit earlier. She would work with anybody and really collaborated well, and just has built an incredible body of work. And come on, those album covers, whether it's Hasten Down the Wind, whether it's Get Closer. Yeah, she was very easy on the eyes. And I was one of those guys that had the crush on her back in the 70s and 80s as well. So thank you, Linda Ronstadt, for all the wonderful music. And you are my number three.
Yep. And she dated a governor. She's got chops.
And George Lucas.
Yes. And George Lucas. Right. Right. Yeah. Love Linda. Great, great, great voice. My number three is, and on my top three, like on a lot of our lists that we do, you could slot any one of my three in almost any order and you'd be justified. And my number three is number one on a lot of people's lists, I think. And that is the hard charging girl from Port Arthur, Texas, Janis Joplin. Born in 1943, unfortunately died in 1970 in Los Angeles. She gets the credit for smashing all of the early stereotypes for rock, I think, that women were subjected to. She was, you know, way rebellious and brash, uninhibited, to say the least, but yet very articulate and very smart. And she knew the message that she was trying to deliver and delivered it so effectively. She advocated social change through sex, drugs, and music. She was an icon of that whole counterculture movement. And she was kind of the musical answer to Led Zeppelin on the guy side. A lot of the same feel, a lot of the same audience. But she was her own person, her own sound, her own act. Unfortunately, the overdose, took her away, but she was cool enough. She left a big chunk of money for her family and friends to throw a party when she died. So I like that about her also. Her posthumous album Pearl was her biggest selling album of her career. So her fans were very sad she was gone, and just as much of Janis as they could get. She influenced Heart, Linda Ronstadt, Stevie Nicks, Joss Stone, some of the biggest in the business. Janis Joplin, my number three.
And I'll pick that thread up when we get to my
number two.
So Janis Joplin is the person that you mentioned at your number three. I've got her at number two. Posthumously into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know, all the things that you mentioned, she was just larger than life. Again, powerful voice, magnetic stage presence. What I think is sometimes lost is she really only had about 3.5 years of fame. She rose to prominence at the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967 and died in 1970.
Yeah.
Only four albums, two with Big Brother, two solo. You know, but when you look at that, though, Cheap Thrills with Big Brother and Pearl, the album you just mentioned, both went to number one. Mama, I Got Those Cosmic Blues Again went to number five. So 75% of all the albums she ever released went into the top five. And only in quotes, four albums, but she's still one of the top selling musicians of all time with more than 19 million albums sold. She, as you mentioned, fearlessly mixed rock, blues, soul. I think that's where the Led Zeppelin comparative is an accurate one. Early days of rock, it was still very much a man's game, but she kicked the doors in, and I think she paved the way for almost every performer on this list, you know, in a lot of ways. And, you know, she was kind of a rock and roll zealot too. Being that she was at many of the signature events of the late 60s. She was at Monterey. She was at Woodstock. She was on the Festival Express. You know, she was just that meteor that streaked across the sky. And when she burned out, she went out in a blaze of glory and left a legacy that is still, you know, unmatched to this day. So, you know, here's to you, Janis. Thank you for all the great music. And she is my number two.
Yeah, and even the other performers of her era knew it. If you were going to a festival and she was one of those performers in the festival lineup, you knew it was the real deal. You knew it was legit. I remember reading some things that Jim Morrison had said about her that were just so dead on. I should have written those quotes down. But yeah, she was a performer's performer for sure. And a trailblazer. And that brings us to my number two, who I think, along with Janis Joplin, is the other person who is as big a trailblazer and paved the way for so many other performers. And you already mentioned her, and that is Tina Turner. You're so right. I can't think of a bigger comeback in music history, but she also, her initial move into fame was overcoming a lot of obstacles, such as her inferiority complex and her self-esteem, you know, problems, and then dealing with Ike Turner and overcoming his abuse. So amazing perseverance just to keep her career going, and a dynamo for sure. Over 200 million records sold. Songs like Better Be Good to Me, Proud Mary, What's Love Got to Do with It, We Don't Need Another Hero. Great, great songs. Private Dancer, 8 Grammys, 25 nominations, which I think you mentioned. Her voice, it growls, it shouts, it smolders, which is just all part of the act. And it is very, very, very musical all the same time. She dances in that full frenzy, but she uses it to command the stage and command the attention to her. Just one of the best performers ever, in my mind. She was going strong at age 69 is when she finally retired from touring after her 50th anniversary tour. But she kept recording through 2017, influenced Annie Lennox, Ann Wilson, Macy Gray, and a lot of other acts. Dynamic performer, love listening to her, love watching her, Tina Turner.
Great choice.
So that brings us through our 10 through 2s. Let's recap. Who are your 10 through 2s?
Starting at number 10, I had the dynamo known as Pat Benatar. Number 9 was Melissa Etheridge. Joan Jett, who really loves rock and roll, is number 8. Grace Slick from the Jefferson Airplane and a fixture on the psychedelic scene is number 7. Ann and Nancy Wilson share the number 6 spot, the band Heart. Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders is number 5. Number four was your aforementioned Tina Turner. Number three was Linda Ronstadt. Number two was the iconic Janis Joplin.
Cheater, cheater, cheater. And Nancy Wilson. My 10 through 2, Patti Smith at number 10. Number 9 was Blondie's Debbie Harry. Number 8, Sheryl Crow. Number 7, Carole King. Number 6, Pat Benatar. Linda Ronstadt came at number 5, followed by Stevie Nicks at 4, Janis Joplin at 3, and number 2 was Tina Turner. And that brings us to the penultimate woman of rock on your list. Who is your number 1?
Number 1.
You already mentioned this performer and scratched the surface on her, and I just think there's so much to this singer, songwriter, performer, and that is Stevie Nicks. She's the only person on the list who is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, both as a member of Fleetwood Mac and as a solo performer. Instantly recognizable voice. She's, you know, equally adept in handling ballads like Dreams or Landslide or rockers like Stand Back or The Edge of 17. But what set her apart for me from most of the other women, if not all of the other women on the list, is that she was equally adept as a songwriter. She was named one of rock's best 100 songwriters by Rolling Stone. When you look at the album Rumors, which is, you know, I think there's no question it's one of the most popular and successful albums of all time, she wrote half the songs on that album, including Fleetwood Mac's only number one hit, which was Dreams. And she did it without cranberry juice. So, you know, she's incredibly talented. She also wrote, as I think you mentioned, for Fleetwood Mac, The Chain, Gypsy, Sarah, Goldust Woman, Silver Springs, Rhiannon. You know, her solo career, she wrote Age of 17, Stand Back, Leather and Lace, the duet she did with Don Henley, Wild Heart, If Anybody Falls, or If Anyone Falls, Sorcerer. I mean, she is just a terrific songwriter. And the fact that, you know, she's able to do both. You don't think of Stevie Nicks as a singer-songwriter, but it's really evident that she is. And I think that's what really set her apart on this list, is that she not only delivered the goods, she created the goods as well. 8 top 10 albums, 1 number 1 as a solo performer. She has spanned 6 decades. She's had top 10 albums in 3 of the last 4 decades. So she remains relevant. She collaborates with everybody. I mean, I'm surprised you and I haven't done a song with her. You know, Kenny Loggins, Whenever I Call You Friend, Magnet and Steel with Walter Egan, Gold, John Stewart, Stop Dragging My Heart Around with Tom Petty. And you also touched on it as well, that sartorial aesthetic that she created, that Welsh witch kind of Rhiannon-like feel with the capes and the shawls and the feathers and the twirling and the dresses and such. She really created that image on stage. Stevie Nicks was not a powerhouse belter like Pat Benatar. She doesn't growl like Janis or like Tina, but I think she has had an incredibly indelible impact on rock and roll as both a performer and as a songwriter. So that is why Stevie Nicks is my number one.
And great choice. Yeah, she's just enchanting, I think is a great word to put it, and just all levels of what she does. Love watching Stevie Nicks for sure. Well, great choice on your part. My number one is somebody you mentioned before, but I am not going to cheat. I am going to say that Ann Wilson of Heart is the number one woman of rock and roll, because it was beautiful as Linda Ronstadt's voice is, and as talented as it is, Ann Wilson's is just the best voice in female rock, in my estimation. Powerful, strong, melodic, musical, can do anything. And where the two sisters are fantastic together, I could make the argument that Heart would survive without younger sister Nancy a little more than they would without older sister Ann. And she formed Heart with a sister. It's the first real girl hard rock band. 8 top 40s, 2 number ones, sold 35 million records, 10 albums on the Billboard 200 in the decades of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 2010s. You mentioned the Kennedy Center Honors, which we did talk about before, and hands down the best cover of Stairway to Heaven ever. Just an amazing voice. She was raised by a military family. She used all that, and it comes out in her singing. There is sometimes a little bit of anger, a little bit of power in the singing, as long as the ability to be smooth and melodic and gentle. She was influenced by the Beatles, and she was fueled by the drive to be the band and not be one of the band's girlfriends. That was kind of her motivating factor in life, and I think she pulled it off. Influenced many, many people, including Alanis Morissette, Soundgarden, Sheryl Crow, Alice in Chains. I think she's the biggest vocal talent out there. Ann Wilson, my number one.
Excellent choice. And you're right. You know, as much as I love Linda Ronstadt's voice, Ann's voice is just remarkable. It is a force of nature. And they put it to great use with some of their earliest. I mean, you know, Heart was the first hard rock band fronted by females.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're going to compete on that stage with the Led Zeppelins and the Creams and the other hard rock bands of that era. You better bring it. And both of them were able to bring it, not only vocally, but musically.
Yeah, but the four female voices that I could just listen to forever were the two that we just talked about, her and Ronstadt and Stevie Nicks and Carole King. Those four I could just listen to over and over and over again. Great stuff.
Concur.
Who are some of your honorable mentions?
You know, we talked about a few of them, you know, during the course of the show. Like I said, Carole King and Joni Mitchell, Debbie Harry, even Patti Smith, you know, all were somewhere near the list at any given point in time. But I just landed on this, you know, it's the old question we always keep asking. All right, if I put one of them on, who do I take off? And yep. It was really hard with that core group. So those are the four that were just on the outside looking in. What about you?
Yeah. Well, we talked about Chrissie Hynde and Annie Lennox already and Bonnie Raitt. They were all real close, but of course, Joan Jett and Grace Slick, Cyndi Lauper was really close. A very easy to overlook dynamo talent. But also one of the newer people that I really admiring more and more is Brittany Howard of the band Alabama Shakes. She's dynamic. She's powerful. Yeah. She can do it all. So look forward to watching her over the years to come.
Yeah. Once she builds a little bit of a track record, it'll be interesting to see where she goes and where she fits on this pantheon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, that about does it for us on the first half. We're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we will have our guest for the guest list. I think you're going to like her. She knows what she's talking about. Be right back.
Okay, show of hands. Do you stick around for the credits at the end of a movie or a TV show? You might, but most folks don't. And even then, you might not be familiar with half the jobs on there. My name is Bruce Rand Berman. When I came out to LA a while back, I found there was a lot more to this industry than I realized. With the help of some great friends and mentors along the way, I've been able to chart my course to where I am today, an experienced television producer doing a podcast about all the different jobs there are in Hollywood and how to get them. So check out Call Time on your favorite podcast platform. You'll hear all about the industry straight from the mouths of the real people who work hard every day and night in the trenches on set and in the office. Yeah, this is my podcast, but it's your call time. Don't be late.
Hello. Wait, what? You haven't heard the new podcast, Mojo Girl Madness? Good news. Season 1 is now available for binging. Mojo Girl Madness is a mad pod with interviews, rants, and stories about sex, relationships, family, divorce, politics, showbiz, and mostly your mojo. Find Mojo Girl Madness wherever you get your pods or at mojogirlmadness.com. And now, back to the main event. Love you madly.
And we're back, and it's time for
the guest list.
And on today's guest list, we are very fortunate to have Evelyn McDonald, who has written or co-edited 6 books, from Rock She Wrote, Women Write About Rock, Pop, and Rap, to Women Who Rock, Bessie to Beyonce, Girl Groups to Riot Girl. She is also editor for the Music Matters series at the University of Texas Press. She has been a pop culture writer at the Miami Herald, a senior editor at the Village Voice. She teaches students how to write and make noise at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, where she is a full professor and directs the journalism program. So she knows what she's talking about on this subject. We are extremely grateful that she could join us today. We welcome Evelyn McDonald. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, Steve. I think we came to the right place.
Yeah, I kind of get that feeling, don't you? You literally wrote the book. Yeah.
Wow, what a varied career.
I had a good life.
So this is a subject matter that obviously interests you. And one of the things that we were talking about a lot is rock over the years, where it may have started a little more small and defined when Chuck Berry and Buddy Holly and Elvis and those guys, you know, Bill Haley were there. It has grown and we've added elements like pop rock and punk rock and, you know, on and on. And now people who I would never have considered rock in the old days, and they kind of get thrown into that genre, Madonna, you know, and some of those people were on our poll on our website. But how do you see the generation? And is there really a standard for rock, or is it just now this all-inclusive thing? What defines rock, in your opinion?
Yeah, what's in a name? Rock by any other name would sound just as sweet. I guess I try to not get stuck in genres, because I feel like genres are, you know, they're like lanes, and a true artist does not stay in their lane. And, you know, goes all over the place and maybe goes off road and, you know, maybe like, you know, gets on a pontoon and goes on the water. And, so I think the measure of any artist is, that they don't stick to narrow definitions. And I feel like, and I hope that rock can, encompass that. And, you know, and I think that, I think like the narrowing of genres into rock and, you know, pop and, you know, alternative rock, I feel like it's a vestige of commercial radio, mm-hmm. because commercial radio has to appeal to demographics to sell them things. And I really feel like the musical landscape is so not dependent on terrestrial radio anymore. And that has made it even more like capacious and welcoming.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, and I actually think that if rock is, you know, the shorthand for, you know, rock and roll of the 50s, well, rock and roll of the 50s is actually fairly diverse. And, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis came out of country, and, you know, Ray Charles came out of gospel. And they both, you know, Ray Charles also played country. And, you know, Bo Diddley came out of the blues, and it was really the coming together of different sounds and genres and demographics. So I always like to think of it as containing multitudes, in Walt Whitman's words.
Yeah.
He was not talking about rock, but he could have been.
But I would agree. And I think one of the things that has really changed for me in my lifetime is radio. I mean, I was a big fan of stations here in LA, like KMET and KLOS, you know, back in the day. Or if you go back even further to the underground radio of San Francisco and the Tom Donahue's and the K-Sans and the K-Fogs. And, you know, those were almost like community radio stations that could play a whole mix of different things, which rock and roll really is. It's a little bit of blues, it's a little bit of soul, it's a little bit of everything else as well. And I think that has contributed. And I think it helps. It has contributed to how we define some of these artists as well. You know, one of the things I mentioned, you know, with Steve's kids, you know, when he and I were growing up, we had the music of the 50s and 60s to look back on. Kids today have the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, you know, this whole huge catalog of music. So I think when you look at you know, what XM radio has done and other narrowcasting, I think we've lost some of that gumbo that rock was when I talk about stations. Do you think that's contributed as well?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up actually listening to, say, AM radio in the 70s, which was also all over the place, and was kind of great and sometimes kind of awful. So I also think, you know, I think people today get their music from, you know, Spotify and from algorithms, and that can take them, hopefully take them all over the place, and sometimes don't, right? So I think that especially kids today are really open to hearing a variety of sounds, and that that's what they want. And that's how it was in the 50s, and that's how it was in the 60s. And I hope we can stay at that place.
Yeah, definitely. Women in rock. I think with a lot of things in life, things that might've been perceived as male dominated. And, yes, I'm talking about you, political world, that things tend to get maybe a little smarter and a little more well-rounded when it's attacked by a woman's point of view and a woman's sensibility. I think rock definitely falls into that also, where, and I don't mean to just simplify and put the guys into one box, but I think you tend to find a little more of the machismo thing about the winning over the girl and being tough and this and this and this, when the point of view for women songwriters and women of rock are just attacking different subjects and taking on different subjects. Do you feel the same way? What do you feel are some of the biggest pluses that the women of rock bring to music?
Well, I mean, I'm also a fan of a lot of men in rock. So, you know, I don't want to, it's not like I'm just like women because I don't like men. but I do feel like women tend to be underappreciated or unappreciated, or, you know, don't get their due. And, you know, of course, we can see that with radio, that, you know, for so long, women were like given one slot on, you know, the classic rock radio stations, or, you know, regular rock stations, or on country music stations, you know, one per set, and, you know, that's it, one per hour. So I really like to validate the work of artists that have been not played as much as they should be. But, you know, I think that I guess maybe not having the constraints of fame can also be liberating. sometimes if you're having to serve all the people that are dependent on you economically, that can actually be a death for, you know, artistic creativity.
Yeah.
So in some ways, you know, not success can be liberating too, or not having the same kind of pressures, and, you know, you can be free to experiment and nobody's going to complain that you didn't write a hit record.
Right.
It's actually, you know, you can look at a lot of acts and almost pinpoint that moment when art became commerce, when it was almost, you know, I need to keep doing this again and again and again, to your point. Yeah. And I was thinking about just the whole idea of women in rock. I found, as I was putting my list together, that a lot of women, when they came into rock, and especially at least on my list, which is, you know, I really kind of used the term rock as my anchor and kind of went out from there, but they all kind of came in at the same place, which was to try and emulate the Robert Plants of the world. You know, you look at Pat Benatar's first album, which is drastically different than maybe her fourth or fifth album, you know, and the same thing with a Melissa Etheridge, or the same thing with a Joan Jett. They almost had to say, okay, I can play in this same ball game as you guys can. And then once they get established, then they could really become the artist they wanted to be. Does that make sense?
I guess so. It's funny because I always think of Robert Plant as, you know, trying to sound like a great female blues singer, right? it comes back around, right? I think that like my definition of rock, you know, as I said earlier, is probably not so specific as yours might be. So as you'll see on my list. And I also think, like, you know, again, like there's so many different kinds of rock. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think you can include Carly Simon just as you can include James Taylor. I mean, soft rock, folk rock, those are definitely parts of the rock world.
Yeah.
Not that Carly's not on the list, but Joni Mitchell is.
Yeah. These are all names that we talked about during our lists. And, you know, I just kind of, you know, cause I'm a huge singer-songwriter fan. You know, I love James Taylor, love Jackson Browne, love Joni Mitchell. Steve has heard me go on ad infinitum about that whole Laurel Canyon scene, you know, from like 68 to 72 or 73, which to me is just absolute nirvana, you know, as a music fan. But I just thought that I want to do a show of singer-songwriters and really be able to focus on them, you know, for those things as well. Although my number one is a singer-songwriter. So you know, it's hard to, as you say, untangle the lines.
Right. They're not, you know, like I say, they're not staying in their lanes, and that's just, I think, what makes them great.
Absolutely. How much do you think the advent of MTV changed the overall perception and the platform for especially the women in rock? It seemed like it gave them that new form of visibility and that easier path to superstardom. And a lot of people like Debbie Harry was on my list, you know, really took advantage of where she may not have been the best singer. She may not have been the best of a lot of things, but she knew how to play the medium and it was perfect for her. She was perfect for it. And a star was born.
Yeah, I think definitely MTV opened doors for women. And, you know, I wrote a book about the Runaways, and I think the Runaways were, if they'd come, you know, 2 years, 3 years later, they might have had much more success, because I think they MTV would have loved them. And obviously MTV did love Joan Jett and Lita Ford, you know, two of the members of the Runaways. So you can explicitly see
right.
that connection. Or, you know, MTV loved the Bangles and the Go-Go's, two groups that, you know, oh, you know, the Runaways kicked down the doors for them. You know, there, it also, I think, like, MTV was a double-edged sword, because it also put so much emphasis on image. And then that became an over-sexualization. And, you know, of course, I mean, for instance, Heart, the Wilson sisters have talked a lot about how all of a sudden they had to, you know, look a certain way and, you know, developed eating disorders. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was the medium that giveth and taketh, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. Great point. Those other things started becoming more weighty in people's judgments of them and took away from the music and the storytelling within the songs.
Right. Right. And all of a sudden it went from being the medium of, you know, of women asserting themselves to of women being arm candy for hair metal bands or rappers. Right. So it kind of reversed course at some point too.
Yeah, we could do a whole segment on the effect of MTV on music. I think that was
absolutely
the largest turning point for popular music in the last 50 years, if not last 100 years, because as you said, the image and the look became, you know, just as important as whatever the music was. You know, you could even argue, would Janis Joplin have been as big in the MTV era? You know, would Grace Slick, would any of these performers who might not have been that eye candy that we're talking about, you know, could they have survived in the MTV era?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important point. Yeah. I mean, not that there wasn't a lot of pressure on Janis Joplin, you know, to appear certain ways too. And, you know, that's been written a lot, but her live performance style was so crucial to her stardom and who she was. And that would not have mattered as much in the MTV era.
I would agree.
Do you have a particular warm spot in your heart for the earlier trailblazers or the pioneers of certain aspects of rock? Or do you find yourself looking at a fairly even viewpoint across the annals of history?
Wow. That's a good question. I think I do look at a lot of the trailblazers and pioneers of rock, because again, you know, some of them, have not been as appreciated as they should have been. Some of them have started to get their dues, and some of them could use more recognition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't always, you know, some of them lived very hard lives and, you know, died without the fame that they deserved. So I think it's really important to honor them. That said, we also have to honor people while they're living, you know, like, this is one of the things that really bothers me, you know, about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is it really likes, you know, African-Americans as long as they're no longer alive, right? Like, it has really bad history, especially, you know, it's going on today, like, of just not many people once they're dead. So I think you have to have both.
Absolutely.
I think you have to honor the past, but also keep your eye on the present.
Well, with that being said, I'm now intrigued. I'm dying to know who's on your list. Shall we reveal that?
Yeah, me too.
Do you want to start with number 10 and work backwards?
Drum roll or something?
Yeah.
We'll put it in post.
Well, actually, to your question, the number 10 on my list is Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Ah,
right, the
yes.
woman who invented the rock guitar sound. So who, you know, was not necessarily considered rock and roll at the time that she invented it, because she was inventing rock and roll and they weren't calling it rock and roll. But in retrospect, and especially in the 1960s, started to get recognized for her trailblazing way of playing the electric guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's problematic that electric guitar is so associated with rock and roll. I think it becomes overly associated with rock and roll, right? Because, you know, piano and drums and bass and horns are also, and the vocals are also key rock and roll instrument. But, you know, they're obviously guitar is important. So I had to put Sister Rosetta Tharpe in there.
Good. Yeah. Great choice. Who's your number 9?
Number 9 is another woman who knows how to sing a guitar, as well as has, I think, one of the great rock and roll voices, and is also a singer-songwriter, Chrissie Hynde.
Love her.
Of the Pretenders. Yeah. I mean, a problematic person in some ways, but one of my favorite interview subjects, and she, you know, I think sometimes underrated for what a great songwriter she is.
Yeah, she made my list. I don't think she made yours, did she, Steve?
No, honorable mention, but yeah, just missed my list. Let's move on. Who's number 8?
So I know that you'd maybe rather have her in pop or hip hop, but I had to put Beyonce on because she's the queen, she's the king. And to me, there's nothing, no image more rock and roll than that of her, like, striding down the street, you know, smashing cameras with her baseball bat on the video for Lemonade. that's like the ultimate rock and roll moment. So
that's very true.
Oh, great. Now I'm going to think of Beyonce as the bad girl of rock and roll now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Who's next?
On a different vein, number 7, another the queen of guitars, Joni Mitchell, also singer-songwriter.
Nice choice.
And I just think you can't talk about rock and roll history without putting Joni way up at the top. And of course, again, she way never stayed in her lane, and you know, was also a great jazz musician and folk singer. But again, like, I feel like that's the capacious definition of rock and roll. And I do agree with you, Kirk, that whole, you know, Laurel Canyon scene, I think, you know, it was one of the greatest rock and roll locations moments.
Have you seen the documentary that was on Epix?
I haven't. I've read some of the books, but I need to see that.
Yeah, it was terrific. And as much of a student of that era as I think I am, I learned so much, just so much from it. It was fascinating. It's a great watch. It's a great watch. So who's your number 6?
Number 6 is Tina Turner. I don't think I need to say anything. I mean, she's Tina Turner. Yep.
Yeah, she was high. She was number 2 on my list.
There you go. I love it. Right? Like, to me, she's like, we're rock and roll. She's like, you know, the ontological definition of what rock and roll is. There's Tina Turner.
And who preceded her?
Bjork.
Oh, wow.
So again, clearly a woman who doesn't stay in her lane, but it's one of my favorite artists of all time. And, you know, came out of punk rock, and then, you know, I mean, she's just tried so many different things in her life and succeeded and been so inventive. You know, since she was a child, which people don't realize.
A friend of mine from Southern California, his kid will just always know her as the swan lady or the whatever she wore to the Academy Awards at one time.
Yeah. For her swan song.
Yeah.
The film Swan Song. People
right.
realized that was a pun. That costume was a pun. Yeah. I mean, again, like the song, you know, where she's, you know, she gets up every morning and she throws all of her possessions off the cliff, and that's how she starts the day. I mean, that's rock and roll. There you go.
That is rock and roll.
All right, we're getting down to Mount Rushmore. Yes, this is the Mount Rushmore for you, Evelyn.
Who's your number four?
Janis Joplin.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like almost as a rock and roll as Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Just definitive for me.
Yeah, she was number three for me. Love her.
Yep. Number three for me is Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Rocksteady. Miss Highway of Love, you know, like she just, I watched the documentary of her, you know, again, like someone who, you know, did soul, gospel, jazz, rock, her great documentary of recording that gospel album is, you know, and gospel is one of the main roots of rock and roll.
For sure.
And to me, like soul, rock, I don't want these to be things that are only defined by race also. So I think that's, not only should we not define rock by gender, I want to make sure we don't define it by race.
Yeah, it's the music. So. Absolutely.
Yep.
Who's your number two?
Okay, number two is probably the artist who's had the most personal impact on my life in terms of like opening the doors in my mind to the possibilities of what one could be. And that's Patti Smith.
Mm-hmm.
High Priestess of Punk. People Have the Power. Maybe the greatest political rock song of all time. So Patti's the one who helped make me who I am.
Oh yeah. That's
phone buzzing there.
Yeah. I gotta admit, we both admitted that we were not as in tuned with Patti Smith as we should be being music fans. I did put her on my list at the bottom of my list, though, because I could not justify this list without her name being on there for me personally. The small amounts that I do know about her, powerful performer too, yeah. Amazing.
I mean, when I was a teenage girl in a small town in Wisconsin, and I saw her on Saturday Night Live, and bought Easter, and just everything about her was just like, oh, this is a whole different way of being in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's very rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, if she's your number two, then number one must be hit big. And now this is where we'll put in another little drum roll for you. Who is Evelyn McDonald's number one?
So this is an artist who, again, you know, if you think of rock and roll as just refusing to stay in your lane and follow the rules and is about challenging the established order and expressing pain and speaking truth to power. I can't think of any more iconic performance than Nina Simone singing Mississippi Goddamn. To me, that defined the 60s, that defined the civil rights era, that defined the role that music could play in changing the world.
Wow. That's,
And I think yesterday was her birthday or today is her birthday or something. So it's also my birthday present.
how long would you say was her biggest heyday as far as her popularity, her effectiveness, however you want to call it?
I would say from the 60s, really up until she died,
mm-hmm.
she had such a strong, devout following. I feel like she was the original cult artist. You see that in how like any movie that wants to have a moment that's like searing and emotional and maybe romantic or maybe political, like that's when they play the Nina Simone song. And someone who had severe health issues, mental health issues, went into seclusion, very rarely toured or played or released records even, and which I suppose like built her cult audience as well. And I feel like also her fame and impact has people have only become more and more aware of it. And like the more we understand what she was going through in her life, and we learn about her and realize that all that pain in her songs was in her life that we just have more appreciation.
Great choice. Awesome. You've made me think in so many different new ways about not just women in rock, but rock in general, and the different lenses we can see it through, and who comes into better relief through those lenses when you look at it in a certain way. This is terrific.
Thank you. It was fun to put together.
Yeah, we haven't had a guest yet where they haven't brought up that one thing that did not cross our radar necessarily that has just intrigued us. And so we always go scurrying back and start learning more afterwards. But that's great. Well, where if people wanted to follow you, are you active on social media? Where can they follow you? And
best is just Evelyn McDonald at Twitter. That's my most active public persona. I'm not an Instagram. I'm not a visual person, so Instagram just doesn't work for me. Yeah. I'm there, but I don't do very much. But I'm on Twitter quite a bit. And
okay, very good. And what's coming up next? Are you currently working on a book, or what's on the near future?
I have a few different irons in the fire, like that are pretty all different from each other. Not necessarily publishing, you know, it's sort of been a year of just like holding one's breath and waiting. And, I think that one of these things is going to come to fruition, in the next few months. So, I'm going to be really excited to find out which one it is.
Oh, as we all will be.
And we are too now.
With a little bit of mystery, she's going to leave us hanging there. Well, thanks again for coming in and spending some time with us. We appreciate your time and your list. And like I said, we look forward to bumping into you again in the future.
Great.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that was great. It was nice to meet Evelyn and hear her take on all things women rock. Like we said, you always learn something here. But now that brings us on to one of our favorite segments, which is where we get to hear the opinions and the voices of our listeners, and that is
the Populist.
The Populist. We had a few ties. There are so many ties on number 9. It was such a big loop that I just kind of made an executive decision and say this is going to be number 10 and number 9 together. And that is the group that includes Gwen Stefani, Debbie Harry, Melissa Etheridge, Cyndi Lauper, Joan Jett, Grace Slick, and Hayley Williams of Paramore. All alone by herself at number 8 was Madonna. The tie for number 7 included Carly Simon, Alanis Morissette, and Sheryl Crow. The tie at number 6 included Lady Gaga, Carole King, and Annie Lennox. Number 5, we had a pair, Linda Ronstadt and Bonnie Raitt. Number 4, All By Yourself, is Ann Wilson, All By Herself, no sister included. Number 3 was a tie between Chrissy Hynde, Stevie Nicks, and Pink. Number 2, By Herself, Tina Turner. And the tie for the number 1 spot was Pat Benatar and Janis Joplin. So, diverse list, a lot more representation for some of the newer people, as to be expected. And they're all very good. I mean, Pink is a great rocker. There's a lot of talent there with... Lady Gaga, of course, and Alanis Morissette and the like. Annie Lennox, who I love. So thank you, listeners. We appreciate your voice, and we'll look for it again. The poll will be up soon for our next subject, for next show. Well, dude, that about does it for us. It was a good episode. I liked it.
Yeah, it was a good show.
We'd like to thank you all at home for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you, and you're what make the show, and we do the show for you. So we hope that you're enjoying it still as much as we do enjoy doing it for you. Next time, we'll be traveling into new territory. It's a little play on words, as we'll be doing our first travel episode as we discuss and rank best American cities to visit. So that should be fun, and something I think a lot of people will be able to relate to and have their own take on as well.
Thanks for joining us this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeartRadio, Pandora, or wherever you go for your great podcasts. We are a member of the Buzzsprout community, and Populist is a Vintage Year production.
Yep, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/populistpodcast. And, of course, there's our website, which is populistpodcast.net, where you can find out more about the show, me and Kirk, hear all the episodes of the past, and vote on the poll for the topic on the next upcoming episode. So please visit, check it out, vote, 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 and we look forward to seeing you next time on The Populist. Bye-bye.
Stay safe, everyone.